हरि ओम सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ओम शांति 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 ओम जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे जय। सो भक्ति संदर्भ अध्याय 2 कैरेक्टरिस्टिक्स पोटेंसी एंड प्रैक्टिस ऑफ भक्ति। ओके देन Bhakti, the path of devotional service, is established as Abhideya previously. Despite a prior detailed exposition of its glory, the current Adhyaya delineates diverse attributes of bhakti to substantiate the assertion made in the preceding Adhyaya, to underscore its paramount significance. The intention is to emphasize that beyond bhakti, no other practice should be pursued. Right? So, it's bringing out the thing of, as we said in the Mimamsa, where you're establishing what's important, what's the most essential. So, you know, glorifying, so that's being brought out, and emphasizing what you emphasize and all that. So he's bringing out again, because in the last chapter, it was made the point that bhakti is the main point. And giving that principle and establishing that with all, you know, Shastric reference and, you know, using logic and everything. But here then, when we go through, then they'll start getting into certain other details of it. In other words, we say bhakti is the main thing and then explain different ways how bhakti is the main thing. So before it was that all the great sages accept, Krishna accepts, everybody accepts that this is the thing. It already, you know, from the basic logic that it contains everything and everything like that. But now you're getting down to a little bit more detail just to bring it out, because this is such an important thing. Since everything comes down to Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, then you need to know clearly what those are. So bhakti always is the Abhideya for anything like that. Sambandha Gyan, you know, is always, it is what knowledge is there will make anything work. And the understanding of Prayojana, that will make anything work. So if thus understood, you can be successful anywhere in the cosmos. But the point is that since it's about pure devotion or prema, and Abhideya is then an anga of prema, then you want to see that everything's being done from that path. It means whatever the jiva is looking for will be obtained through pure bhakti, nothing else. Because you can say, oh, but will I get my Ferrari? It's like the jiva doesn't need a Ferrari. So even you get it, you won't be satisfied, you know, especially when you get the bill for the new tires of 10,000, you know, euros each, you know. So, yeah. The first Adhikarana elucidates the universal auspicious nature of bhakti, establishing its unparalleled supremacy as the Abhideya. It affirms bhakti's power to remove obstacles and to fulfill all desires, emphasizing the unique position of the devotee. Detailed scrutiny follows, demonstrating bhakti as a source of freedom from various fears. Right? Because we saw before, as fears, fear and samsara go together. Because the living entity has forgotten Krishna, he identifies with the body. That means he's involved in the cycle of samsara. And so if he's fearful, because whatever you have gained on that bodily identity, it's like the lotus, the water on a lotus leaf. At any moment, it can go and disappear. And so one is fearful of that. So by bhakti, then you're always established in service to Krishna and identity with Krishna. Krishna's eternal, jiva's eternal, our relationship's eternal. Therefore, the fear goes. The author asserts that bhakti, with inherent potency, effortlessly eliminates sin and also removes the sinful desires in the heart. Right? Because so that's special, because no other path can remove the sinful desires in the heart. They may eliminate to some degree if you follow very, very difficult things and wait for, you know, a long time. But here it's, you know, soma, like mahapapas, that may take 12 years to eradicate that sin. So, you know, with very austere situations. But, you know, just like by circumambulating Tulsi, then even the sin of killing a Brahmin, which there is no atonement for in any Shastra, can be accomplished. So that's the point, is bhakti is so much more powerful. It's beyond what the others can do. And that's getting rid of sins. Then there's sinful desires, which the others can't even touch. All right. So even like you saw before an example, even if the person got to, it said, you know, roasted those desires and all that, so they became like ash, then and one attained the platform of mukti, that in that liberated state, then the desires can't function. But because he, you know, he's also given up desire. So then when he goes to the Brahman platform and he's absorbed in his Brahman meditation, that will last the soul for some time, as long as he feels the happiness from having given up the material world. But as soon as he gets adjusted to his position in Mahakalapura, just sitting there in the bright light and everything like that, then at some point he gets, you know, agitated to do some desire, I mean some activity. And the only activity he knows is material, not spiritual. And so what that will do is then from the ashes, the desires will rise again. So they never go away. They may be, you know, dealt with in such a way that it's a problem. Like you may take the problem person and put them in a room and lock the door, but they won't stay in there forever. You know, so that's the point, is that only bhakti can actually destroy the sinful desires within the heart, though, that it removes that and that. So we see is just how much superior bhakti is. In contrast to the path of knowledge, jnana, bhakti's transformative results are proven to be unparalleled. It is also stressed that bhakti not only removes the sinful desires, vasana, but also completely eradicates the ignorance that gives rise to those desires, right? So ignorance that I'm separate from Krishna, or I can be controller and enjoyer, that's the basis of that. So it can get rid of the linga sharir, which is something that karma and jnana can't do. You know, karma definitely can't do. The jnana, you know, up to the point of liberation, they haven't gotten rid of the desires in the heart, and they can't get rid of the ignorance that comes from that it's based on, because these material desires are based on the idea I'm controller and enjoyer. So that linga sharir remains, you know, so that's what you're dealing with. So if the soul, yeah, you know, it'd be interesting to note if that's what, when they're sitting in Brahman, what Gopa Kumar sees, all those living entities sitting there in their form and meditating and all that in the Brahman in Mahakalapura, if that being there, they're there in their linga sharir because they've given up the gross and subtle body, you know, but they're still there in the linga sharir because they still have a form. He could see their forms. Next, Adhikarna asserts that bhakti operates beyond the control of the three modes, emphasizing its independent and superior position. Means it acts beyond the modes. We still may have attachment to, and therefore deal with that. You know, just like when you wake up from the morning, even if you had some dreams for some time, you can remember the dreams, but they're not there. When you were asleep, it was very much the reality. But when you're awake, it's not the reality anymore. You know, it's the dream. Like that. But so bhakti can function independent. So it's just, if we want to remember the dream, we can go on like that. But bhakti is functioning despite our attachments and illusions that may be there. That's the glory. So even the karmis, they see the devotees, you know, see the tilak on the devotees and, you know, hear the kirtan that the devotees, or, you know, see the deities. They have no, you know, what's the adhikar? But by the grace of the devotees, they get the adhikar that they come in contact with devotional service. Because Krishna says, as you surrender, he'll reciprocate. But they haven't surrendered, so there's no reciprocation. Devotees will go out and, without qualification, give them Krishna. And so that's beyond, that's independent, that's beyond the mode. So they have no qualification, but they're seeing the Lord, hearing the holy name, you know, possibly tasting prasad, or the ducks in the park, you know, and Prabhupada fed them in Regent's Park. It's not that they, you know, what's the qualification, but his mercy, he gave, fed the ducks. And so therefore now, next life, they'll become human, you know, and then continue on with the bhakti that they performed. Describing actions influenced by the three gunas, it clarifies that Satvaguna was not the cause of bhakti, and established that the mercy of the Supreme Lord and his devotees was the exclusive cause of bhakti. Right? So, because there was one point, I think it was in the, maybe in the 90s, then a book was written by one devotee about the importance of the mode of goodness, and basically pointing out if you don't live a life of goodness and try to endeavor for goodness, you can't perform bhakti. You know, in other words, bhakti is dependent upon you being in goodness. So the person was, you know, a bit of an intellectual, very clever person. And, but the problem is in overthinking things, you know, from this ascending method and speculative method without connecting it to, you know, the religious process for us, which is bhakti. You know, that's the sadharma. And then, you know, to assist that, we'll use the Daivavarnashram and stuff. So he took it that, you know, because it's recommended that, you know, devotees of goodness and everything like that, then he would and all those different things, because that's the natural situation for a devotee, because he's in pure goodness. Naturally, this stage of goodness is the natural place. It's the, it supports. In other words, situations of goodness and action and goodness and understanding goodness supports working in pure bhakti. But the elements of but it's not that this mode of goodness produces bhakti, or is because of that you got bhakti. You know, in the same way, if it's not that, then other things, because of passion or ignorance or, you know, one's own desire or anything else, those both, they'll be an obstacle in as much as they distract, but bhakti is more powerful than them. So even though those things, like it says, that bhakti destroys the sinful desires in the heart. So even if they're there, it still acts. Because if it wasn't that, how do you come to the point of shraddha? Where's the adhikar? Only the association of devotees. You haven't even seriously started the practice of devotional service, but you're counted on the path of Shraddha to Prema because you have that conviction. So that is, like it mentions, only the mercy of Krishna and the Vaishnavas. There is no other cause like that. There is no other cause. Okay. It affirms that the joy experienced through bhakti transcends the impact of the three gunas. Right, so what you in doing devotional service, that's beyond the gunas. So you can't say, oh, you're just sentimental or this or that. It means you can see it as genuine in the kirtan. They appreciate or seeing the deities, or you know, hearing some discussions on Krishna katha, you know, or taking prasad, or just appreciating, you know, the service of devotees. These are all transcendental to the modes of nature, and so the impact. In other words, what effects they're having on you because of your identification with it, or just, or even just residue of identification. Still, it's beyond that. So it can't say, oh, that's just mundane. And no, that's real. That's the point. Bhakti is real. Everything else is an illusion. In order to further affirm the transcendental nature of bhakti, the next adhikarna elucidates on the transcendental potencies of bhakti. It affirms bhakti as the exclusive means to connect with and please the Supreme Lord, citing the Lord's joy through intrinsic energy, Ladini. The text emphasizes Bhakti's role in realizing and controlling the Supreme Lord. By sadhana bhakti, by sadhya bhakti, prema, and sadhana, dharma in the form of direct bhakti was lauded for eradicating sins, adhering to constant remembrance of the Lord. It concludes, so it'll eradicate them all, you know, how much you're absorbed in remembering the Lord and have given up the idea of identifying with the external energy. But in any case, any, whatever you're applying on that, you applied a drop, you got the effect of that drop. You know, so it's beyond the modes. It can't be stopped by the modes. The text emphasizes Bhakti's role in realizing and controlling the Supreme Lord. Oh, by sadhya bhakti, prema, and sadhana. Dharma in the form of direct bhakti was lauded for eradicating sins, adhering to constant remembrance of the Lord. It concludes by highlighting the potency of even occasional engagement in direct devotional service and of bhakti abhas, a shadow of pure devotion. Right? So even they are having potency. That was the whole point of Chapala. Gopal Chapala. He couldn't digest that bhakti, just even a bhas, a shadow, could have so much potency that it can give liberation. You know, when all these great personalities and sannyasis and pundits are working so hard and so austere and they're not attaining, so how can just some simple person without all that knowledge and austerity attain to that? So that's the point is, bhakti is so far beyond. There's no comparison. We look at, okay, there's these and that bhakti, and bhakti is, you know, better because it'll get bhakti. No, it's like night and day. You have bhakti, and then you have these little shadows that they're actually shadows of bhakti, in that they use the form of bhakti to be applied in the material. Just as if we turn from our position of being identifying as servant of Krishna and turn to thinking that I'm the gross and subtle body. But the point is we're still working in the five rasas. It's only by in a situation you're in, you know, and the qualifications, nature of the elements that are in that field, then can you, with your qualification and knowledge and making an endeavor, abhideya, get the result that you want? So you're working in gross, you'll get in gross. So you work in subtle, you're getting subtle. But the point is bhakti is independent of that. So they're still doing all the different things like you would, that souls will do, but it just becomes more and more perverted and distorted. But otherwise, they can't function otherwise. So it's not like they're independent paths. You know, it's like saying the mirror is independent. It means you could walk around in the mirror without being in front of the mirror. Right? No, it's because you're in front of the mirror, it's reflected. It doesn't have power to reflect if you're not in front of it. So that's the whole point, is that there is no other path. It's only an illusion we think there are other paths. Just like we think in illusion, we think we can become happy by dealing in other areas other than in devotion to the Lord. You know, if you karma and jnana will be happy. No, you can't. So it's an illusion. So it's an illusion to think that there are any other paths or any other things. So Krishna, you can see Krishna's kindness is that even though that's the standard, and that is the reality, even though the living entity has turned from Krishna, Krishna still, out of his affection for the living entities and to perform another wonderful pastime, creates, you know, through the Mahatattva, and an opportunity for the living entities to go through so-called some other illusory kind of thing. You know, it's like the child wants to be Batman, so then the father might, you know, tie a small blanket around his neck, you know, and then pick him up and fly him around the room and everything like that. So, for the kid, then for him, yeah, it's all happening and this and that. But for all the adults and everybody else around, they know it's just a kid with a blanket on being carried around. You know, so in the same way as that you're there, you're the big man, you're the powerful man, the influential man, the rich man, you know, like that. But it's all Krishna's potencies are making that happen. You're just a little jiva that can't, you know, isn't even big enough to move a material body, let alone do all those things. But the jiva identifying with it, then he thinks, yes, I'm doing so many things. I'm so fabulous. I'm so great. But in reality, no, it's just you had the desire and, you know, you've acted in a way that's not against that particular desire by your previous action, so you get that. Or if in the previous you've misused it, so this time, even though you want it, you can't get it. So it's just based on, you know, the action reaction of what you did, how you did. You know, it's just like if the child acts nicely and all that, then the father will play more with that game with them. But if the child starts getting proud and dealing improperly, then the father just puts them down. And then it doesn't matter what happens, he can't fly. You know, it's only because his father picked him up and carried him around, therefore he's flying. So that's just what's going on in reality. But, you know, the jiva needs to feel a bit more important than that, you know, like that. So, you know, I'm an adult and I'm this and I've got this qualification and this degree. So he therefore then, yeah, it goes on and around and everybody applauds and this and that. But in actuality, it's just souls being an illusion, trying to carry out all these things when in reality they're none of these things. They exist, you know, just like the blanket around his neck, you know, exists. You know, he exists, his father exists, that he's up in the air, it exists, just he's being carried around, you know. But it's not what he thinks it is. Yes, I'm, you know, Batman or Superman and I'm flying and I'm this and that. No. Yeah. Okay. Next, the importance of avoiding the offenses is highlighted. Offenses like disrespecting Vaishnavas and underestimating the holy name hinders bhakti. The Lord's mercy avoids the crooked, and that the faith in the avoids the crooked, and that the faith in the Supreme Lord and engaged in bhakti distinguishes devotees from cunning individuals. Oh, okay. The Lord's mercy avoids the crooked. Maybe we need a comma. And that the faith in the Supreme Lord those with faith in the Supreme Lord engaged in bhakti distinguishes devotees from cunning individuals. Something there. Okay. Okay. Very nice. Okay. So faith in the Supreme Lord engaged in bhakti, that is what makes the difference. You know, and you could have that, but at the same time, if you're disrespecting Vaishnavas or underestimating the power of the holy name, then that will hinder your bhakti, right? Those who are crooked and just doing those for, you know, getting their benefits and this and that, they're taking part in bhakti. Krishna may give them some this and that, but they won't get very far in bhakti because they're only performing bhakti basically as an anga of their karma, you know? So that's where it's crooked. If someone is karma is an anga of their bhakti, that means then they just have some residue attachment. And that will go in time if they have good association and they're sincere. But if it's the other way, where it's the bhakti is an anga of their karma, and they're just smart enough to know that if they can get some facilities and this and that, then that kind of thing, then they may get those things. And then, you know, it'll all disappear and go away. Like that. Effects of offenses, including engrossment and other objects, are then explored. And it is highlighted there that ignorant individuals can surmount offenses because of the Lord's special mercy, while offenders who do them deliberately face severe consequences. See, it's one thing is that you're ignorant of them and don't really understand, and you think you're doing something in devotional service or this or that. So then that kind of thing, it doesn't mean you won't get a reaction, but you can surmount them by the Lord's special mercy. But those who are doing it on purpose like that, then they get very severe consequences like that. They don't care and all that. Finally, it is stressed that worshiping the Lord and chanting his names leads to perfection of life, regardless of the individual stage, right? So wherever you are, that chanting the holy name, worshiping the Lord, you know, then under the direction of the devotees, chanting the holy name, then whatever stage you're at, even if you're at the Ajata Sukriti, it will bring you to the point of faith. And if you're there, it'll take you beyond. So that's the I think the prayers of the Acharyas or something, it's the one, you know, it's the perfect, you know, process, you know, like that. It's the perfection of everything. Like that. It may be a prayer by Haridas Thakur, I think, where he's talking about all the different glories, the best of the yajnas, you know, it's the perfection of that, it's the perfection of this, it's sort of like that. The final adhikarna expands. So not having faith means you don't have faith that if there's a problem in somebody's life, it's chanting of the holy name and engaging in devotional service, worshiping the Lord and the association of the Vaishnavas, that's going to solve it. And they think that there's some other thing that needs to be done. No, only devotional service, only that is required to bring you on to the perfectional stage. The final adhikarna expands on the definition, mood, and attitude for pure devotional service, listing 9 types of such activities. Initially, ananya bhakti, worshiping the Lord exclusively without material desires, is explained as the exclusive abhideya. The discussion then demonstrates how the relationship between the Lord and his devotee embodies this pure devotion, right? Because it's the abhideya is to express your love for Krishna. So the abhideya becomes the point at which Krishna reciprocates with the devotee. Because he says, as you surrender, you reciprocate. So if you're, worshiping the Lord exclusively without material desires, right? Then he reciprocates in that position. If you're performing, you know, you have faith, you're worshiping the Lord, but there may be some mixes, then he will reciprocate with that. So abhideya is always the basis of interaction, right? Like you see, as Krishna is the Lord of existence, Radharani is the Lord of is in control of the happiness, you know, or the pleasure that is gained there, that Krishna gains. And Lord Balaram then is the, in control of the techniques and mechanisms that are used by the devotees to express that connection. So therefore, the pastimes that are there, that's the abhideya. You know, the mechanics are in there in the background, but that's what connects Radha and Krishna together, and Krishna and all the devotees in Braj, is that it's the abhideya. So the abhideya is the central feature. That's why Govindaji is the main deity, not Gopinath. Like that means there are two features, Madan Mohan and Gopinath, and that's going to vibhava. You know, that one will be inspired to serve Krishna, but then the natural thing is anubhava. You will therefore want to do something. It always brings about abhideya. So whenever you see the attraction of the Lord, you want to do, or you're appreciate of that love and affection he has, and those things are his happiness. It just makes you want to do more. So everything comes back to the abhideya. You know more about the sambandha gyan, then you perform the abhideya. You know more about the glory, you know, how Krishna is so kind and everything, then you want to do more. You do an action, it gets a result. The results of the action, now you want to observe for Krishna. Like you want to cook for Krishna. Then, you know, so you're inspired. So then you see the ingredients. So you're inspired to cook. And then you cut them all up. You're inspired more to cook. Then you're cooking. You're inspired because it's all going nicely. Then you have, you know, then you have the results. You have the cooked preparations. Now you're inspired to offer them. Right? And then once you get them, you know, offering to Krishna, now you're inspired that to distribute them, you know, or to honor them. You know, so that's the whole point, is that when you perform bhakti, you get the result, but it always comes back to Prajumna, as Prabhupada mentions. And also that knowledge, Sankarsana, it always comes to Prajumna. So that's always going to be, the abhideya is the middle feature. It's always happening there. Therefore, that's happening in the present. And that's what's always ongoing. So there's no, that's why we're not so worried. Worried about Maunabhi's not talking or all these different things. It's like, what are you doing for Krishna? Because if you're engaged in Krishna's service, you're not doing nonsense. If you're doing service, you're not creating trouble. you know, like that. So that's the whole idea. It emphasizes undertaking means the discussion then demonstrates how the relationship between the Lord and his devotee embodies this pure devotion. It emphasizes undertaking bhakti without any material desires, forbidding desires for pleasure in this life and the next. Right? It means you're just looking at it to take care of and how to serve Krishna. That's then the whole idea. There's no separate, you know, element. The exposition on pure devotional service and its essence was complemented by enumerating 9 types of devotional activities. While all types were mentioned, it was clarified that performing just one sufficed for the desired result. So all 9 are there to perform. And a devotee's life, there's generally at all various times, you know, that one's going to be performing one of the 9. And all 9 at some point will be being done in something. But just focusing on one, your own conscience on one, will give perfection, let alone if you're doing all of them together. Like Ambarish Maharaj says, all of them are being done. But otherwise, the examples are given of the great devotees that just by one, they're attaining perfection. Like that. Okay, so then the Adhyaya summary. Then is Adhikarna 1. Then we have Anuchedas 121 through 132. Bhakti is all auspicious, removes all sins and their reactions. Adhikarna 2. Bhakti is transcendental to the 3 modes, Nirguna. Adhikarna 3. Transcendental potencies of bhakti. Adhikarna 4. Offenses in the practice of bhakti. Adhikarna 5. Characteristics of pure devotional service. Okay, so now, Adhyaya 2, Adhikarna 1, bhakti is all auspicious, removes all sins and their reactions. Adhikarna Prakashika. The present Adhikarna commences by elucidating the universally auspicious character of bhakti. Aiming to establish means, so universal means it's literal. It's not just a nice statement that sounds good in some meeting and, you know, and inspires people to do their work or, you know, get the job done or to feel good about themselves or others. No, this universally literally means it's universal. And using universal, because we say cosmic, you know, then that brings out, you know, other weird concepts. But it is in the whole cosmos. So when we say universal, we're meaning the universe that we're in, and it's saying it applies in every universe that's there, because we don't have access to what's beyond that, you know, other than through bhakti. Okay. Present Adhikarna commences by elucidating the universally auspicious character of bhakti, aiming to establish the unparalleled supremacy of bhakti as the Abhidheya. Then, quote, the special dharma among all dharmas for humans is worship of Vishnu. The results of all sacrifices, austerities, oblations, visits to holy places, and baths in holy places, if multiplied 1,000,000 times, are attained by worshiping Vishnu. Therefore, with all attention, one should worship Narayana. Right? So if you take the results of all sacrifices, right, it's saying all sacrifices, all austerities, all oblations, all visits to holy places, and all baths in holy places, you take all that together and multiply that 1,000,000 times, then it says by worshiping Vishnu, you get that. It doesn't say that by doing that, you'll get Vishnu. It says by worshiping Vishnu, you get the benefit of all that. Therefore, for the devotees, it's just a matter of remembrance of the Lord and, you know, being in a favorable situation. It's a tirtha, it's auspicious, the sacrifice, the austerity, the oblation, the holy place, and the bath in the holy place. These are all enumerated by the Lord, connected with his pastimes, his instructions, his practices, you know, and all that, and interaction with the devotees. So in line with that, one is doing. It's not because one needs this separately to advance. No, it's that remembering these things is based on bhakti, then you get that wonderful result. So this is Skanda Purana. So interesting thing is that we see some very nice things from Skanda Purana, even though it's one of the six Puranas that's written for those who are attracted by the mode of ignorance. So it's written in a style that they'll be appreciative. But then within that, then it contains verses like this, which points out that you should be worshiping Vishnu, not Shiva, you know, like that, and not being so on the gross bodily platform. So, yeah. Beginning with the affirmation that bhakti has the power to remove obstacles and fulfill all desires, the author stresses the special position of the devotee who practices bhakti. O Madhava, Supreme Lord, Lord of the Goddess of Fortune, if devotees completely in love with you sometimes fall from the path of devotion, they do not fall like non-devotees, for you still protect them. Thus they fearlessly traverse the heads of their opponents and continue to progress in devotional service. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.33. So this will be a prayer by the demigods. Okay. An elaborate, so therefore it's special in that it can remove the obstacles. Otherwise, if one falls from the path, right, how do they get back on the path? Because many will take it, oh, it's offensive, that's it, you're eternally damned. You know, that's kind of the contemporary approach to things. But here it's that, no, the bhakti has the power to clear all that and bring you back to the path of pure devotion. An elaborate explanation is then given regarding how bhakti liberates individuals from the shackles of sense gratification. Quote, my devotee has not fully conquered his senses. He may be bound by material desires, but because of his generally strong bhakti, he will not be defeated by sense gratification. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.14.18. He won't be defeated because he will give up sense gratification and come to the point of pure bhakti. So that's the thing, is that even though there might be attachment, you still cross beyond that. That's the whole thing. It's that bhakti is more powerful than anything else. But you have so much desire for that, you might go into that. So therefore, the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.33, it will bring you back to the path, bhakti. But on the path, then wanting to cross over that, then that'll go. So we see is that that's that fourth stage of anartha nivritti, is the war with maya. And so then, you know, bhakti has the power to get one through that and to the fifth stage, where now one is situated in devotional service nicely. It's just that the results of his endeavors don't always come so smoothly. He's situated steadily in devotional service, but the results are not necessarily steady. And then, you know, you get to the sixth where the results are steady. But now, see, when the results aren't steady, no one takes you seriously. But when the results are steady, now people notice and all of that. Then you have to work and deal with Dhanam Janam Sundareem. So now bhakti can take you beyond that. And then that takes you into, when you get to there, then you see is then Ruchi will be the cause to take you beyond that, you know. Yes. Something to say or? No? Okay. Further, a detailed examination follows, demonstrating how bhakti serves as a source of freedom from various fears. Quote, when a person worships Vishnu, there are no obstacles, no wicked kings, no thieves, and no illness. Pretas, Pishachas, Kushmandas, Balagrahas, Dakinis and Rakshasas do not obstruct the worship of Vishnu. Narada Purana 1:10.8-9. Right. Yeah, so there's no obstacles. Right. The author next affirms that by the practice of bhakti, a devotee can easily free himself from all kinds of sins. Right. So it's just like on the material platform, you have this this inspiring quote. I don't remember exactly how it goes, but something about the only obstacle to your success is your lack of determination, or, you know, the only obstacle is your view on it. So you have a better view and confidence and you can get over anything and this and that. But the weakness here is they think they are the controller and enjoyer. So if they have the karma and that, and they focus and they follow actually the proper methods on dealing with those obstacles, you know, on the whatever material platform they're working with, then yes, by the Lord's potency, they'll get beyond. It's still by bhakti, but they don't know it's bhakti and they don't get the benefit. But for the devotee, it's because he's absorbed in serving the Lord, he gets beyond all that. But it's not because he was determined, he was this and that, and he was so austere. It's because he was fixed in bhakti. And these other things are just nice ways to express it, right? You need something to express. Pastime means that there is something to work with. Like children play, they take something. Like, you know, they take a rock. I remember seeing one kid in Mayapur. I was like 6 years old, and we had all these, you know, these big, nice, you know, smooth rocks in the garden. So he was going around and found two really nice rocks, you know, really even and smooth and the same size and nice colors. And then he came and, you know, sat at the base of the mango tree and put them there, standing up, leaning against the tree. And then he got some flowers and leaves and this and that and started doing puja to Goni Thai. You know, so that's the whole, you just need something, you know, something is there, just a little bit of something to create the mood, you know, like that. You know, the kid takes a piece of paper and folds it up into like a boat, but then you put it sideways on your head. Now you're a pirate, you know, now the whole thing comes. Yeah. You know, if you want to be a Tyrannosaurus Rex, you put your hands like this. You know, so you just need some medium to express. So that's because in bhakti is, you need something, there's not something that needs to be done. It's not that Vrindavan needs to be managed and, you know, the cows, all this. These are opportunities to express bhakti. So it's all arranged by Yoga Maya, to, you know, that by for Krishna's desire, that all these arrangements are there. And so the important thing is the expression of bhakti. There are ways to express bhakti. You know, just like, let's say someone gives flowers to somebody. It's for expression. It's not that you could also just say, but the flowers make it more. You know, so all these different things are just mediums to express. You know, that's what we're dealing with here. So that's the thing, is that there's no obstacles because bhakti itself takes care, but there's ways to, you know, show that there is. The Pandavas get over everything, insurmountable. But they get over everything. But it's not that those obstacles might be not be there, but then their faith in Krishna, their worship of Krishna, you know, their service to the Vaishnavas, that's what continues. And then bhakti removes all those obstacles. So that's the whole thing. So for these great devotees, those obstacles are arranged by Yoga Maya because they have no obstacles. They're pure devotees. And for the sadhakas, then it may be arranged, means there are no obstacles coming from karma. But because of one's particular attachments, which kind of attachment you had in karma and jnana, those kind of obstacles will be used as the medium because they mean something to you. Because if you use something else, you wouldn't care. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like a, you know, The author next affirms that by the practice of bhakti, a devotee can easily free himself from all kinds of sins. Quote, O Uddhava, just as a blazing fire turns firewood into ashes, similarly, devotion to me completely burns to ashes sins committed by my devotees. Srimad Bhagavatam 11, 14, and 19. Yeah, so it's the devotion to Krishna that burns. It's not the specific austerities, it's that. Those are all being performed in devotion. So it's the devotion that burns. You may use the austerity or other things as the medium, but it's the devotion that burns it, not something else. That's why it's this need for external things, that's for the common person. But it's not actually necessary in bhakti. That's why in Manu, then there's, you know, so much detail on prayaschitta, because for the common person who's not a devotee, then they require seeing some external thing happen to say something happened. But for devotional service for the devotees, then it's just that you're engaged in devotional service. That's what's happening, because that's actually what makes things work. Everything else is just, you know, a medium. The author then affirms that bhakti, endowed with inherent potency, not only effortlessly eliminates sins, but also distinctively deals with the fundamental source of sinful desires in the heart. Right? So specifically what they are, that source, it goes there. In stark comparison to the path of knowledge, jnana, the author further clarifies that the transformative results attainable through bhakti are unparalleled, right? So again, it's in stark comparison. So it's not just comparing the jnana, you see, yeah, it's not quite as effective, and bhakti, you can see it's a little bit more, you know, like that, you know, like that. So no, it's that, it's stark. It's so obvious, the difference. And if we're saying in jnana, so how even more ridiculously stark it is for karma, right? Because if you take jnana and that's thrown out, karma automatically, you know, goes along with it. It emphasizes that bhakti goes beyond the elimination of desires, vasana, and extends to addressing and removing the ignorance that gives rise to these desires. As we mentioned before, is that the ignorance that of our relationship with Krishna and who we are, our actual nature, gives rise to I'm the controller and the enjoyer. That then it takes on the specifics of the particular, desires that we have today, right now, because yesterday it was different and tomorrow it'll be different again. It's always changing because they never satisfy, so they always have to be changed. You think, yeah, if we do this, I'll be happy. And then you do it. Yeah, that was nice. Let's do it again. Well, it was okay. It was okay. Yeah, I don't know, like that. And then you have to do something else. You know, so that's the thing, is they're always changing. So you get rid of the ignorance, you get rid of the whole thing. The concluding anuchetas highlight the multifaceted benefits of bhakti, shaping individuals with qualities such as jnana and vairagya. Those just come as ornaments. Right? Ultimately endearing them to all, right? So, because they have all these nice qualities that come up from bhakti, their performance of bhakti by the Lord's grace and the devotee's grace, then they become, you know, they have nice relationships, because the whole point is ultimately it's a relationship, right? Sambandhi Gyan means everyone's relationship with Krishna, and then everyone's relationship to each other through, you know, in connected with the, or based on the principle of their relationship with Krishna. So therefore, it's all based on qualities. Krishna interacts with qualities, you know, the 50 qualities that are mentioned in the Nectar Devotion, you know, with the devotees. Well, 54, you know, for those in Braj. And so then those are going to be the intermedium for interacting with him, right? And then the other ones beyond the 54 to 60, those six then are going to be for those who appreciate the, 50 to 60, those 10 are going to be for those who appreciate the majesty, right? And those four are going to be for sweetness. So, but the 50 are the qualities that Krishna devotees use to interact, you know, themselves, that's reciprocal, that they both have, the common qualities. Adhikarana summary. Oh, no, wait. Through this comprehensive exposition, the current Adhikarana aims to reaffirm the unparalleled status of bhakti as the ultimate path to spiritual realization. Okay, Adhikarana summary. Okay. So now we have as the Acharya is giving the different points, you know, and then, so in other words, he's giving points and giving logic. And there's going to be the natural that you can, just through appreciating that logic, see things nicely through. But there's also the aspect of, if doubts come up based on those, you know, because of the nature of the modes of then these points are addressed. So the logic, you know, carries on the form of that discussion back and forth to clear. Right, so the Panchanga Nyaya, that is the natural presentation that you use for discussing something with somebody. Now, that's, you're just presenting like that, but these are the main categories. But what's along with that is the person may have doubts, and so therefore at various points you're going to address those doubts. So specifically, that's going to be in the third stage, but you know, it'll be based on things from the first and second. So in the third, when you're giving an example, you're trying to bring it, you're trying to make it so that the person can actually see what you're talking about. Right. And then like that, then you conclude. So this is a dynamic that goes on as part of it, but it's is depending upon the individual you're discussing with. It comes up at various times, to various degrees, to various lengths. Like I remember once discussing something with somebody, it took 3 years for them to appreciate the point finally. So the Vishaya, Samshaya, and Uttara, and that went on for 3 years. You know, the points have been already made, but their doubts on it took 3 years to clear. And this would be, you know, sitting in the class and hearing it after class, those, you know, few minute discussions, sometimes coming and sitting and discussing for an hour or so. You know, like this, so over 3 years that was done. So that's why it's the five are the main points. And then this is just how it's supported to deal. So that's why you see Vedanta Sutra. And then here, that because it's being logically presented, naturally people may have doubts, you know, and so then they will bring up their doubts, and then you can address them, and then they can therefore counter what you've said, and you counter that, and keep going until it's worked out, and then you give the conclusion. And so that just brings it back in line just with the natural form of the five. So Vishaya, pure bhakti offered to the Supreme Lord is the best of all processes. There is nothing higher than this, as bhakti bestows all desires and removes all obstacles for a devotee, right? So it's complete in itself. It is the best process of all processes. There's nothing higher, because it gives all desires, removes all obstacles. Karma only gives certain desires. Mukti only gives certain desires. Right, that. But bhakti gives both. And it's not troublesome like the others are. And it gives eternal results. While the others, even though the bhakti is there, they give temporary results. Because the bhakti isn't giving results in bhakti. It's only giving results in karma and jnana. So, like that. And it shows all and removes all obstacles, right? So then here's then the Shastra quote, the path followed by persons who are friendly, virtuous, and surrendered to Narayana is certain, auspicious, and without fear of obstacles. There's no fear of obstacles. Even if obstacles come up, there's no fear, because you know bhakti can't be stopped by any obstacle. Bhakti clears all obstacles. So even if it's there, an obstacle, you're still expressing bhakti to overcome the obstacle, to perform your service to Krishna. So that's the point, is that there's no obstacle to bhakti, because even during obstacles, you can perform bhakti. No matter what the situation, you can always be engaged in bhakti. So therefore, there is no obstacle to bhakti. We're all thinking, oh, if I get this done, that's the thing. No, that's the expression of your bhakti, but the, you know, the particular form you plan to apply it through. But if it doesn't work, you still just go on expressing your bhakti through whatever's there. You know, you think, oh, we're going to cook this today for the Lord. Then you get and find that not all the ingredients are there. So now you can either go through the endeavor, if you have the time and facility, to remove that obstacle by, you know, arranging and by some way going to the market or bringing from home, or somebody else may have something, or, you know, like that, to get the ingredients that you have. So in that way, you perform, it's bhakti that you're doing it to perform that service. So it's only enhancing your preparation of that item by the obstacles. It just expands it. So instead of, you know, putting in, let's say, you know, an hour to do this, it may take three. So it just means more bhakti. So bhakti is never disturbed, right? Or you might find that it's not there. You have to make some other plans. So you made all these plans for this, for that preparation. And Krishna will appreciate all that devotion done. Now, because that was so nice, now do again in this other way. And how are you going to take what ingredients you do have, or what facilities, what you can cook? And so then bhakti always continues. Bhakti never stops. That's the point, is that there are no obstacles to bhakti. So we may take it as an obstacle because we'll say it's an obstacle to karma, jnana. But because there the result is the gross result in karma and the, you know, freedom from anxiety of the material world in jnana. But the point is those are temporary results and they're external. They're not connected with the soul, but the soul with bhakti then can always perform bhakti no matter what. So therefore there's no obstacles to bhakti. We've said, oh no, I'm cooking. That's the bhakti. No, that's the through which you're expressing the bhakti. It's a symptom. We can see how nicely they're cooking and how absorbed, how much the bhakti is there. But it's not that the cooking is itself the bhakti. It's an anubhav. It's a manifestation of the whole thing. So therefore, it gives rasa. It gives all these different things. But it's an element of bhakti, right? Like that. Okay, so then continuing, the fear in jnana caused by loneliness and the fear in karma caused by envy does not arise bhakti, right? So it's nice here that's talked about what specifically the fear is. Jnana is loneliness because you're on your own, you're renounced, you got all these things, no one's bothering you and this and that, then you figure out you're alone. There's no one else. There's no relationship because you've seen the relationships give trouble. You get rid of all relationships on any level. And then you see, finally, okay. And now it's like, but then now you're lonely, you know, or karma, because you get all the different things and you're the big rich guy, but there's always someone richer. You're beautiful. There's someone more beautiful. There's always someone more. And so that envy and all that, you're afraid. So basically you're afraid someone will be better. You know, that's the way it is. Okay, so then the shamshaya, the doubt. How can you say that bhakti is all auspicious and removes all obstacles when there's a chance that a devotee may fall down from the path of bhakti, right? So then that's the point, is that you can say it's all auspicious and there's no obstacles, but the devotee might fall down. He might fall away. And so then having, so you would say that's an obstacle and it's auspicious because falling down is not auspicious. You know, it's an obstacle. So they're pointing out, how can you say this? You know, because they're looking at the external, of course. They don't understand that bhakti itself is eternal, because anybody who have a doubt is bringing up a doubt from the platform of karma jnana. That's their approach. And so in karma jnana, you get physical results. And so they're saying it's an obstacle in physical results, or the physical situation or that you once in is not auspicious. You know, according to Shastra, you know, of auspicious for karma jnana. So therefore they're going to see right here, we can see it, you know, because that's the whole point, is that we're dealing here is they see that, but you're trying to bring that bhakti, a vision, the Shastra Chakshus of how to see it properly. that is then what's going to be the pratyaksha that you get from, you know, Udaharna. Right, from discussing the example, the drishtanta means now they see it. So they see this. So now you see is what they see. And then you see, okay, that's the medium they're working through. Now you have to show how bhakti, using that as the medium to show what is auspicious. So you have to show what's actually auspicious, what's actually an obstacle. Not just fight over which obstacle is better or worse. You know, well, you're not any better, you know, so how can you say that? You know, so it's a matter of, no, it's that you have to bring to their vision what is actually the proper way of seeing, right? The hermeneutics. In other words, their hermeneutics is wrong. And so you have to bring them to the proper understanding. So that's then what we'll see in the upcoming Purva Paksha and Uttara. Chai. So we'll end here. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.